thought it was higher.
Okay. So the message, first of all, let me thank the organizer for inviting me to this very beautiful workshop. It's, I'm very glad to be here. No. That's good. No. What's up?
Some slideshow.
Well, the message, the main message of my talk. So, if you can see now, so you can see now. Maybe it lets me do.
Yeah, without
the yes.
Maybe you could run some calculations in the background to slow down. Maybe
it's saying something here. Okay. Okay, the main message of my talk is the following, that many efforts have been done in order to understand the sub-halo population of our galaxy. And now the next point is to understand the sub-sub-halo population. And I will show just a very simple example of why we really need to know how to treat sub-sub-halos, because it's very important, especially now, for detection of recent blasts. So, I put myself in the CDM framework. I'm very happy I don't have to explain this because I'm already explained very well. What maybe you didn't have time to show is that while putting this power spectrum myself, late inside his numerical simulation, he could actually resolve very small mass halos at a redshift of 26. So we end up with a model of a galaxy, of our galaxy, which contains about 10 to the 16 halos in the range mass that goes from, let's say, 10 to the minus 6, which can be 10 to the minus 12 or 10 to the minus 2, but let's fix 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the 10 solar masses. We assumed a Navarro-Franco-White profile for these subhalos in order to see if they can be observed, for instance, with glass. And then we had the problem of understanding how the structure of this Navarro-Franco-White was built. So essentially, the problem was to... Maybe
there's a box.
Yeah. The problem was to understand how the concentration parameter as a function of the mass could have been built. I want to show now a brief list of the models we have assumed, just because yesterday I got some questions about how the different models were built. So essentially, if here you have the concentration parameter for the Navarro-Franco-White, thank you, versus the mass of the subhalo, and here you have 10 to the 10 and 10 to the minus 6 solar masses. You can assume up to, let's say, 10 to the 5 solar masses. We have models from Bullock or Eke-Navarro and Steinmetz, let's say. That goes like this. This is Bullock, this is Eke-Navarro and Steinmetz. And then we have somehow to treat all the lower lower mass part of this spectrum, which is something that we really don't know. The first thing that we did was just to linearly extrapolate this to very low masses, which resulted in a concentration parameter here of about 60 for a 10 to the minus 6 solar mass halo. Another thing to do could have been to take the results of this simulation. This subhalo in particular has a concentration parameter of 3.4, if I'm correct, at a redshift of 26. So if we redshift it today, we get another model that is slightly similar and gets to about 80 today for a 10 to the minus 6 solar masses halo. And then we wanted to use a toy model which would have been really optimistic for very small masses. So we just extrapolated this up to something like 400.
So this is not a theoretical basis, but we really don't have any other hint but this simulation to understand what's going on. And this simulation has been done with this for Halos form and one sigma peak. So if you think that, for instance, the close by Halos will form something like five sigma peak, then you can have a 400 value. Of course, we were assuming here that all the subhalos were, all the small mass subhalos had this concentration parameter. These are one part of all the models, and were computed the values of the scale radius and of the scale density for the Navarro-Franco-White profile were computed at redshift zero. In the other models, we compute these parameters at the redshift of formation of the halo. That means that we assume these toy models where we have today very, very concentrated halos. So this is the framework that yesterday I didn't explain very well. And this is what we end up with. So we have the Milky Way diffuse foreground of annihilation. We have the sum of all the 10 to the 15 solar, all the 10 to the 15 halos along our line of sight. And we can also have some, we can hope to resolve the brightest halos. But of course, we have huge uncertainties, just because, as you can understand, these models differ very much from each other. So if you take, there are models where you actually cannot observe any halo. Here I'm showing the number of detectable halos with glass in 1 year at 5 sigma for different slopes for the mass function, minus 1, minus 1.95, minus 1.9. So the result is that for the different models, we can have non-detectable halos for any of the mass slopes. Very few to 100 of halo for the same model, but with different mass slopes. Or models where, anyway, we can hope to detect more than 100 halos. And what is more important, that all detectable halos have masses greater than 10 to the 5 solar masses. Okay, this is a parenthesis, just because I will need it later. Those models with 130 halos, actually, without any constraint from astrophysical measurement, this number could have been 1,000 and more. But all the models, or the number of the models had to be renormalized to the measurements of egret. So the number of photons predicted should not exceed the egret measurements. So just let's close the parenthesis and let's go back to the detectable mass scales, which is more or less the dwarf-like mass scale. Okay, all those numbers that I showed you before were assuming a Navarro-Franco-White given from the theory, with all these different assumptions for the concentration parameter and then to the scale parameters. But now, what happens if we try to use profiles which are derived from astronomical data? So this is a work which has been submitted very recently. We took for Draco, for instance, also for other galaxies, dwarf galaxies in the local group, a few curves of density profiles derived by some groups, such as Gilmore, Lokash, or Pinarubio. Now, what is important to say is that all the data arrive at a small radius, which is small, but is finite. So the angular resolution of all the astronomical measurements have this limitation. And what happens that actually for Draco, the astronomical data could be fitted with both a Navarro-Franco-White profile and with a core profile. So all what is here in the very inner radii, this is the density is a function of the radii. This is extrapolated. But within the errors, which were including in the data from velocity dispersions, you could fit both a core profile and a spiky profile. So essentially, the astronomical data could not be entangled if the profile for the dwarf are cored or caspy. Now, we want to see if GLASS could see anything, so we have to compute the gamma ray expected flux, which depends on particle physics and on astrophysics and cosmology. Let's focus for a moment on particle physics. So we have this plot of annihilation cross-section times versus the mass of the neutralino. And we can focus on three models. So a 40 GV neutralino with annihilation cross-section 3 times 10 to the minus 26, 100 GV with 10 to the minus 25, or 1 TV with 10 to the minus 26. And then we are going to integrate above the threshold energy, which is plotted here. So here we have this factor integrated above the threshold energy for these three models. And
I think Michael also showed a similar plot, but there you had many more points at larger.
I know that is a new calculation from Sergio. This is obtaining the minimal supersymmetric model with that soon.
So,
I think Sergio just considered a wider range of models.
Yeah. So this is a smaller range of models.
Anyway, these are the ones allowed by and actually, also Margaret said that an interesting part is between 10^-26 and 10^-25. I think that giving a higher cross-section is maybe too much. So, we have computed this value for the particle physics contribution to the gamma ray flux, and then we have to compute the line of sight integral of the square of density. Now, it comes out, these are the results for the different profiles I showed you before. Now, remind that the Gilmore profile, which is the red one, is given by a core profile. While this blue one, the local chatel, is actually fit to an avalanche to white profile. Now we have this very funny thing that both the Caspian and the core profile give the same result. And actually, to understand this, we have moved this dragolite dwarf galaxies from very close to us to very far. And this fact is due to a very fortunate combination of the distance of Drago now and the angular resolution of GLASS. So if Drago would have been at 40 kiloparsec, of course, the Caspi profile would have given a higher value of the Cosmo with respect to the core.
Sure, that's because when you get into a core model, the scale density actually has to increase to actually fix the same value for the velocity dispersion. So it's like you're flattening the core, but you're also increasing the central density. So I think that it's just this whole thing is just fixed by essentially what's the rough quantity of scale density squared times scale radius cubed. Okay, so that's the thing that gets fixed by the data, independent of what the central cost is.
Well,
so I think that's what's...
This can be true, surely. And the effect can be seen at higher angles, but I actually changed the distance of Draco, and it changes.
It changes.
Yes, it changes.
Okay.
I can show later if one. So around 80 kiloparsec, where Draco is, actually this does not make any difference. And this is, of course, because the two curves, the two density profiles are normalized to almost the same data. So now we have numbers to give, which is our prediction for the gamma ray flux from Draco above 20 MeV. So we take this value, which is the higher one, that is the value of this particle physics factor integrated above 20 MeV. And then we take the value of this cosmological factor along the line of sight towards the center of the galaxy. That's the one we're interested in. So the 10^-10 and 8 times 10^-10
4, which holds for broadcasting 4 for 5. So the total is this 8 times 10 to the minus 11 centimeters per second.
Is the threshold 20 millimeters?
20 millimeters. Because if I just multiply this number times this one. And this is computed as my minimum. And this can be given from both models we were considering, which, well, this one is pretty much optimistic, but this one as well for the mass. So, let's say these are, this is a very optimistic estimate for the flux. Now, why it's important, this number, 8 times 10 to the minus 11? Because in the next paper from the Fundamental last year, they computed using the glass tools the necessary flux to have a 5 sigma sensitivity above 20 mV in 2 months. In 2 months above 20 mV. Then this flux is is something like 10 to the minus 8. This means that we are far below the detection threshold. So there is, if we use not a Navarro central white profile with a very high concentration parameter, which we take for some reason, but if we use the astronomical data to derive the density profiles, then even if we are very optimistic about the particle physics sector, then we end up with a predicted flux, which is 2 orders of magnitude less than the one necessary for a 5 sigma detection. So we need a boost factor.
Have you checked how that depends on the threshold energy? What if you use a threshold of 3 GeV?
I haven't checked that.
I think that makes a big difference.
So we need a boost factor. Anyway, I'm not expecting a huge change. A boost factor could be due to the presence of a black hole inside a dwarf galaxy. Well, the presence of a black hole inside the dwarfs has not been excluded by the data, but if we use the mass sigma relation, then it turns out that for the velocity dispersion of Draco, we expect a black hole mass of 22 solar masses, which means an enhancement in the very small, small radii close to the galactic center, to the center of the Draco, which leads to a boost factor of only 1. Of course, we could have put the black hole 10 to the 6 solar masses, and then we would have had 10 to the 7 as a boost factor, but this is not realistic. I would say it's excluded by the data. So we have to search for something else. This is my last slide. So, how can we treat the presence of subhalos inside Draco, which is a subhalo of our galaxy? And this is my point. Actually, I will show that we'll end up with a boost factor that possibly could make Draco detectable in a long time, let's say 8 years, but still it's not nothing. And still it can be combined with other dwarfs and lower this this time. So actually, including subhalos inside the subhalos is the only way we have to see with glass the dwarf galaxy. So that's why it's very important. So I've computed this boost factor for all of the models I've shown you before. Of course, this is a very simplified assumption, and I would like to have feedback here on this, because this is also work in progress. Of course, I don't think it's the correct thing to do is to take the same subhalo model that we use for a Milky Way and just to translate it to normalize it to graph. Just because if, for instance, a subhalo goes out of the visual radius in the Milky Way, then it gets attracted. But if it goes out of Draco, then it's lost in the Milky Way. So if not for this very easy thing to think about, I think we kind of assume barely the same model. But if we do that,
And if we normalize the degrowth data both pessimistically and optimistically, so if we lower the models which give a number of photons higher than the degrowth data, and if we rise the ones that give a number of models which are below the degrowth threshold, then we end up with the maximum boost factor, which is above 7, which, as I told you before, would give detectability in 8 years. Well, of course, this is an oversimplified toy model for understanding the nature of the sub-halos inside sub-halos. But I really think that this is the way to the thing to investigate now after the investigation of the sub-halo pollution.
I was going to ask, so this boost factor of 70 seems a lot higher than what Mike was saying earlier. And this seems to be just from one level of sub-halos?
Yes, but from the sub-halos inside Draco. But the boost factor of Michael was computed on the simulations. I've used these very fine profiles. So this boost factor of 70 is actually the combination of the boost factor in the cosmological sector and the boost factor in the particle physics sector after normalization to the EGRAPH data. And of course, if I use this profile here, which is very, very boosted, then I get the boost factor alone of 850. But of course, it's not what they get in their simulations, if not because they can see small mass halos in the simulation.
Just mentioned, like Manoj said earlier, this boost factor is going to create an independent plot, say what's the minimum mass halo and what's the scatter, say, in the concentration versus mass relation. And that actually, that's when I say increase what the probability distribution for this thing could be by maybe a factor of 2 or 3. So we don't actually have an exact number yet, but Manoj has a student who's actually calculating this. You know, and it seems like numbers of order, say 20, 30, might not be implausible.
And I'm still confused about this. So yes. This is going to lead to a distribution of boost factors.
Right.
So some halos are going to be boosted by more, but others less. So how do you know that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something you can put this in and just marginalize over it when you're actually calculating what the mean signal expect.
Well, this is dominated by the smallest, which are, there are many of them. And so you see the average, you don't see the distribution.
Yeah. It depends upon exactly what the mass function is.
Yeah.
It depends very, very sensitively on what mass function is. Like the
Can I clarify one thing, which is, is this the boost factor from the substructure in the core profile or in all the profiles?
No, that's something like.
Okay. The other thing I was going to say is this worried me a bit about the detectability of the individual cell payloads. I think there is actually more physics behind, how concentration works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we do understand that actually better than just extrapolating those things down to low masses. I worry that those concentrations you're using are too high by, large factors.
Maybe.
Naively, so that result that Jurg gets, that you find a concentration 3 when something's just formed, or 4, on a very small mass scale, that's sort of the understanding I had, that everything that ever forms with a concentration of 3 or 4, it then, those concentration just goes to scale factor as long as it's isolated. None of the things that are substructure have been isolated for some time. So you wouldn't necessarily expect concentrations above, 10 or something in the solar neighborhood. The only way you see that is if you had something that had sat out at large distances for long, for a scale factor of 7, right, and then fallen in. If you put in very high concentrations, the boost factor can go as concentration to the 2.5 power, 3 power. So it makes a huge, if you put in a factor 10 there, right? So then, okay, you have the EGRAPH limit, so you drop everything down. But my worry is that you're putting all the signal, at least in the earlier work, that you were putting a lot of signal in the very low mass stuff, because you were assuming huge concentrations for those things, and that they wouldn't actually have that. They'd have, concentrations 10 times lower, and therefore they contribute 1,000 times less, 100, 200 times less. But
no, you're absolutely right. We just try to be optimistic with love, kind with love.
The funny thing is, it's optimistic in a way, but it's pessimistic in another way, because if all the really, really small stuff is giving you all the flux, then you don't see the big guys because of the confusion limit. So there's some trade-off.
But you still see the smooth kind of, as you look for
it. Yeah, okay, so you see. But I mean, you see a lot, you know, if there's a line in the gamma ray or something.
For things that end up in the solar neighborhood, there's another effect.
Yeah.
Which, these are typically about 2 sigma halos. So they form about twice the typical direction. So they're initially denser than the isolated halos you were talking about.
But I thought you actually showed what the concentration was. And what, I mean, you were doing it in central density, but do you remember what do you know what concentration parameters those were with?
I don't have that. No, I don't remember that.
Because, I mean, that would be, that would be a sort of test.
They initially have higher central densities. And then
it's in here.
The time through the tides, they increase enormously. That's another effect on top of that. But also the Lorentz goes down, which, of course, was the other effect. So, but you start off with having higher concentration building blocks build up later, you know.
I think it's...
Yeah. I mean, it's all relative, right? It's always it's always the concentration relative to the thing it's merging into. So it's always a question of the only way you'll get a big difference is if you had a really small thing sit on its own for a long time and then fall into a low density system. So if there's bias, if all the matter in the solar neighborhood comes from high sigma peaks, it doesn't matter, right? It just cancels out. I mean, you get a higher mean density, so you get the overall prediction, but you don't get necessarily high contrast ratios. But
James, the number I remember is that the solar radius is 3 times more concentrated than a field halo that would be less.
Is this a normal?
Yeah, which is not a big, so exactly. So that's not a big difference given how much older it is, right? If you say compared to a field halo of a given mass at redshift zero, but a field halo is up in the field, right? And it would take a long time to get to the solar. It would get a long time to take a long time to get to the solar radius, right? So most of the material of the solar radius is much older than that. It fell at redshift whatever, 4 or something, 5. So that would give you exactly that factor of 3. So it's.
In a way, I think the next step, which is very important to understand, is to use the results from the simulations now that they have this concentration parameter as a function of the radii, which can lower the background at higher radii. That's a question I wanted to ask you actually. Do you have any naive estimate of how the concentration changes from field halos to sub halos?
Yeah. That's what I was just quoting. So it goes as r to the minus 0.29. So at the solar radius, you're about a factor of 3 times more concentrated. And actually, but then as Zirk just said, you also counteracting that you have an anti-bias spatial distribution, so you end up with less sub halos close to the solar radius. So if you actually then calculate, you know, that the unresolved flux is actually, those two effects kind of cancel each other and you don't get a big change compared to what you do.
As James was pointing out, that the problem stays with the regular mark colors.
Okay, sorry, do you want to finish?
That's fine.
Okay.